This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over the kissing booth. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we, in the month of February, a.k.a. Friendsuary, what? Cover a movie a week centered around friendship. Aww. Today, we are doing The Kissing Booth, picked by moi, yours truly, Corinne. I am here today with my lovely co-host, the woman who we have thrown out all the friendship rules, and we have made it up as we went along, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Oh, no. I have clearly written out friendship rules for you, but every time I present them, you just fling them out your window and be like, huzzah!
Yes, I say huzzah so much.
Yes, you do. Especially when you throw my hard blood, sweat, and tears on paper out the window. But I'm okay with that. Like, I know that you like to fly by the seat of your pants. And who does like to fly by the seat of her pants? Nobody more than my co-host, Corinne Edding. And I'm sending you mwah, mwah, air kisses since we're mwah, mwah, doing mwah. The kissing booth.
Oh my gosh. Tamara.
Yes, ma'am?
I was super sick on Monday. Sounded like an 80-year-old chain smoker.
That's right. You texted me and I was so excited because I wanted to introduce you as, this is Marge, my new co-host. She recently quit smoking and we're very proud of her. Welcome, Marge. But you got better.
Thank you. Yeah, I got better. Yeah. I still have a remaining cough, which those will be cut out of the podcast. But I returned to work today and I was like, I'm gonna be so good. I'm gonna get a good night's sleep.
Yep.
I'm gonna go to bed earlier than I typically do. I have to get up early for work tomorrow morning.
Great for colds. Way to get better.
Yeah. So I take my cold medication, I take my antidepressants, I take my nose sniffer thing, Flonase. I take it all. Take it all at once.
You had quite an arsenal of drugs there that you took all at the same time.
I know. Well, I didn't do the nose sniffer thing at the same time, but yeah. And I accidentally overdosed myself on cold medication and so woke up at 2 a.m. with my head being like, ding, 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 and me feeling like super speedy and like I was living in a fun house. And I don't think of it as fun. I don't enjoy feeling like that.
To be clear, she did not go to the emergency room or anything for an overdose. No. She just took too much medicine. Because when she told me that's where my mind went first. Yeah. I was like, you did what?
No. The only thing that was harmed was my psyche and my ability to like get a good night's sleep. So, yeah. Had very bizarre dreamt in black and white, which never done that before. And yeah, it was a truly odd night of not sleep. It was not very restful. How are you doing?
Better than you, apparently. The day's been fine, but I was regaling Corinne with, I got a haircut at a new salon last week. I was very excited about it because I've been wearing my hair curly. And the stylist had curly hair, and she was a curly hair stylist. Never been there before, was super hopeful, got the cut. She was a nice girl. She did a good job. She actually used a diffuser on my hair, which was great because most of the time they always just want to style it straight because it's easier. So she used a diffuser on my hair and I was like, oh, cool. And it's still like, I never like my haircuts when I first get them, but I give them the benefit of the doubt. And I was like, I'm just going to let it lie, you know, wash it, see what happens. And I did that and I fucking hate it. I know you said it looked fine.
No, I think it looks really good. So
really?
Yeah. But that's, I mean, like, it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what you think. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I really don't like it. And so it's nothing against her. It's probably the same feeling I get a lot of times when I get haircuts, but usually I just chalk it up to like, oh, they just don't know how to cut my hair. And oh, I'll just have to deal with it. Or, oh, you know, I'll live with it. I can make it work. And I've always done that except for this one time. And I was like, you know what? No. I texted the salon and I'm like, can I please just see my stylist? I don't think she cut my layers as short as I like them. And I was wondering if she could fix it. And they're like, absolutely. Come right in. We'll gave me a bunch of times to pick from. And I picked one and I'm going in on Friday to get a little bit more off the top and sides. And I was just like, I've never done that before.
Nice.
Oh my God.
Oh. I'm so excited. I love that you spoke up for yourself.
Yeah. I was like, it felt good. But then like I tipped her. I always tip my hairstylist like really, really well, no matter what. Like I hated my last haircut. She butchered me and I still gave her like a 30% tip. And so this girl, like I gave her a substantial tip because they make you pay half of your salon fee before you go in to book the time. And then
interesting.
Afterwards. Yeah. Just to make sure that they're not like losing money if you don't show up or whatever, which I'm like, I don't care. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But I had like enough to cover the full amount. And I think I just gave it to her and I was like, yeah, just keep the change. And so now I'm wondering if she was like, oh my God, this is a really nice tip. And then I text and say, I'm not happy with my hair. And she's thinking, oh, it's because she's a bitch. She's going to be a difficult and complicated client. Great. She tips well, but she makes you earn it. Okay. Okay. Now I know what I'm dealing with. So that's like going in my head, like I'm wrong for wanting to like my haircut that I paid for.
Yeah. That you paid a lot of money for.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to say that you're like a super bitch for doing that, but I'm glad that you said it first.
I am. Boy. And you know what? When she tries to cut my hair, I'm just going to put my shoulder at my ears. They're going to stay right here. And she's going to be like, can you please sit up straight? No, I'm making you work for this now, bitch.
She couldn't have possibly enjoyed your company while you were while she was cutting your hair because you're not funny or like cool to hang out with or anything like that.
Oh, I can tell you 100% that I wasn't when I was in the chair because I'm like, you have curly hair. I'm going to pepper you with questions about your styling products, your process. And like, I literally sat there and like quizzed her. And she has curlier hair than me and does not put nearly as much time and effort into her curls that I quite quickly found out after my interrogation. But that's okay. I still got some good tips.
I like it. I'm here for it. And I'm super excited. I hope that you going back gets you the end result that you want.
Mm-hmm. And if that doesn't happen, I am for sure going to reach out to Jonathan Van Ness from Queer Eye and ask him to do me a solid and please come fix my hair because they have a new season out and it's already over. So I know he's got time.
Yes. JVN, help my friend with her hair.
I've always just been like, oh, that sucks. I don't like it. And now I'm like, no, let's try it one more time.
Yeah. I think that's great. I love that.
Yeah. They always say you kind of come into yourself around your 40s and 50s. Like, then you just don't give a shit. And I give a shit, but like way less about other people's feelings over mine than when I was younger. Now I'm like, I need to put myself first.
Yeah,
sometimes,
you do.
Most of the time, all the time.
Yes.
Most of the time. Okay. Most of the time. Most of the time.
So Tam, do you have a tasty little synopsis for us?
Oh, don't say tasty. I have so many feelings. my synopsis is tasty, but just this whole, like, this kissing booth, this, we'll get into it. We'll get into it, yeah. But I do have a terrific synopsis.
Ooh.
Elle, played by Joey King, has lived her whole life in sunny Los Angeles with her BFF Lee, played by Joel Courtney, at her side. This is our second movie in Los Angeles. Did you realize that, Corinne?
Oh, like the last movie that we did was in Los Angeles?
I Love You, Man was in Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, it totally was. I was like, what was the last movie that we did?
Can't remember. Oh, my God. Blasphemy. You even gave it a good rating. You liked the movie.
I know. I did like the movie. I legit liked the movie.
Oh, my gosh. It's like this podcast is both of us just screaming into the abyss because as soon as this recorder turns off, we're like, what the fuck did we just do? I don't remember. It doesn't matter. No, just on to the next week. Anyways, Elle and Lee grew up together and were thick as thieves until things started changing.
Ooh.
The summer before her junior year, Elle had a growth spurt and people started noticing. The guys at school, the popular girls, and Lee's older brother Noah, aka Flynn, played by Jacob Elordi. Half of Noah wants to protect her because she's like his little sister, but that half is fighting real, real hard with the other side of him that wants to do other things.
The bed dance.
But none of that matters because Lee and Elle have a bestie pact, and rule number 9 of that pact is family members are off limits in the love department. And Elle would never, ever, 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 ever do anything to jeopardize her relationship with Lee. But things change.
Ooh.
And everything goes haywire when the lifelong friends construct a kissing booth for their high school fundraiser. Elle has never kissed anybody, but that's gonna change. The real question is, who's she gonna kiss? And will it or won't it rock her world in more ways than one?
Ooh.
The answer is yes. Yes, it will. But you'll have to keep those listening ears listening to find out who gets it on at the kissing booth.
Nice.
Well, Corinne, are you ready to get it on at the kissing booth?
I am ready to make out. Let's do this thing.
Mm-hmm. Ready for some paid over-the-shirt fornication. No, fornication's not a good word. Tongue fornication.
Okay, sure. Let's.
What a kissing booth is. It's a temple of tongue fornication.
Temple of tongue fornication. That would be the alternate title that Tam would give it.
Oh, I have a couple. That's one. That one just flew off the cuff, but the other ones I have written down.
The kissing booth. This is a story about Elle, played by Joey King, friendship and love. You see, Joni and Mrs. Flynn... They never give her a name. Should we give her a name? Or they just call her Mrs. Flynn?
Why don't we call her by her proper name, which is Molly Ringwald?
Okay, we'll call her Molly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You see, Joni and Molly were besties, the best of besties. And while it is true that Molly did have a kid before her bestie Joni, later, she and Joni got pregnant at the same time. And not only did they have their babies on the same day, but also at the same time. Ta-da!
Do you think this was a coordinated effort? Do you think they were like marking their ovulation calendars, getting their moms to buy them ovulation thermometers, and then like checking in with each other on the daily to try to get pregnant? Or was it completely coincidental?
Oh, no. It was completely intentional, for sure. They were okay. Like, okay. Hey, Mom, ovulation thermometer, please. Yes. They were sending each other messages. They were calling each other and being like, hey, time to bone your man. Yeah.
Or they were just sending the emojis, flaming heart, eggplant, peach, squirty emoji, happy face, lick emoji, lick emoji.
Oh, yeah, they could have, because there were cell phones, I think, around when...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except they might not have had emojis, though.
We could be the parents of the kissing booth kids.
Bite your tongue. Why? Why do you do that? Why? You were lusting after Noah. I hope you're happy with yourself. Because you were lusting after somebody that could be your son, who's young enough to be your son, Corinne.
He's an adult. He just is playing a teenager.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler. Gentle listeners, Corinne lusts after one of the main characters, Noah.
You didn't notice his rockin' hot bod, did you?
No.
No.
Not at all.
Uh-huh.
Did he have his shirt off? I didn't notice.
Yeah. Throughout like 90% of the movie. Yeah. Mm. Anywho, Elle, daughter of Joni, and Lee, son of Molly, were raised basically like twins. Joni and Molly passed on their big friendship vibes to Elle and Lee, who basically were besties since birth, beating out Tamara and I, who've been besties since too.
Fuck them all to hell, though. We have the longevity.
Yes, yes, we do. And as Elle and Lee grew up, they shared many life experiences, but most of all, they shared their love of dance and playing Dance Dance Revolution, aka DDR, baby, woot woot, at the Santa Monica Pier. Occasionally, Lee's older brother, Noah, would make an appearance, protecting them from bullies or helping them out, fixing their bikes. But mostly, it's been Elle and Lee negotiating life and friendship, and this, their junior year, together. However, two major things happened to Elle as she hit puberty in her high school years. One, her mom died of cancer, which is super sucky and tragic. Yeah. And two, Elle's appreciation for Noah has grown. He is a hunka of a high schooler who rides a motorcycle, sports a six-pack, and has the cutest floppy brown hair. Also, he's fortunately played by a 21-year-old, so I feel a little less bad checking him out.
Do you feel less bad because he's young enough to be your son? Or old enough to be your son? Both. He's young enough and old enough to be your son.
Age is just a number.
Okay, cougar. I see you.
I will have you know that I have turned down 20-somethings that have come on to me on the dating apps. So there you go.
Yeah, but that's because you want something more than a booty call.
Yes.
And talk about Pokemon and Minecraft. So I understand that. Uh-huh. That makes sense to me.
Yes. There's just one problem with Elle falling for Noah. You see, Elle and Lee developed a list of friendship rules, and Lee created rule number 9. Relatives of your best friend are off limits. Elle thinks it's because he doesn't want to have to worry about competing with his super hunky brother. I mean, Lee, he's pretty cute, but more so in an adorkable way. He, too, has the floppy brown hair. He also just happens to not have the swagger and be kind of scrawny.
Protein supplements can help with that, Lee, but I don't think that's he doesn't care. He's fine with his adorkable self,
yes.
I feel like.
Yes. Yeah.
It's the end of summer, and Elle, who is typically dressed for the heat in a ratty pair of cutoff shorts, flip-flops, and a baggy t-shirt, is hanging out on a Chase Lounge poolside and wearing a bikini at Lee's parents' Modern Hillside Estate. Modern Hillside Estate is a fucking understatement because this house is ginormous.
Yes.
It looks over the water.
Yeah.
It was actually one story and the other two or four stories were CGI'd on. So... it's massive.
Oh.
Yeah.
You did some research.
I did a little bit of research. It's a fucking huge house. And if anybody, even two friends deep that I vaguely was acquainted with, lived in this house, I would be over there too. They would be asking me to leave. Please. You've been here for 2.5 weeks.
I would too. They have a lovely pool. I'd be, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But anyways, Elle, who's wearing a bikini, and I wrote that this just isn't any bikini. There are bright pink squares positioned right under her nipples to the end of the bathing suit, which essentially turns her boobs into something that resemble traffic cones because they are just up and at them, and they have like a basic stop sign on them.
Okay. I did not notice that. Good observation.
Yeah. Yeah. Lee's house is basically made of glass. It has a view of the beach. It's very modern, very large, and very expensive, Corinne writes. Maybe I should just tack on those earlier comments after that couple of sentences. The pool is more modest, but it's still lovely, and Lee takes full advantage, leaping from a deck off the house and cannonballing into the pool, soaking Elle, who laughs it off, saying, "It's a good one!" Lee pops out of the pool and sits on the lounge chair next to Elle, and they start to chat until they're interrupted by, "Mom chicka bow wow, mom chicka bow wow, oh yeah," the shirtless Noah. But he's wearing pants. Well, football pants. And Noah asks Lee if he's seen his athletic cup, and Lee laughs this off, and then Noah pauses and changes topics. "Hey, Shelly," he says, calling Elle by her least favorite name, and she responds, "Hey, Noah," calling him by his least favorite name. So what do people call him if not Noah? No? No man? The Ark? No, they call him by his last name, Flynn. Noah points with a smirk on his face. "When'd you get the boobs?" And Lee quickly replies, "While you were off at football hero camp, it was like she was on some boob-growing hormone." Elle cuts him off from further embarrassing her, saying, "Lee, rule number 2. And we are regaled with rule number 2, which is never share our secrets with anyone else. Noah brushes this off, though. "Whatever. M&D are out of town Friday night, so party starts at 8. Don't invite any jackasses." Lee retorts, "Does that include you?" And he turns to say something to Elle while Noah picks up a football and throws it smackingly square in the back and toppling him into the pool.
Aww.
Noah walks off to go to practice, and Lee exclaims to Elle, "What an ass!" Elle looks fondly at Noah's retreating rear end and nods appreciatively, saying, "Yeah." Lee quickly reminds her, "Hey, rule number 9! And Elle feigns disgust. "Ew, as if!"
They tease each other and continue having fun poolside, enjoying their last days of summer.
I just have to say that what Lee did off of the house was very dangerous, because that pool was like 9 or 10 feet from the roof that he was jumping off of, and very narrow.
Yeah, yeah. No, every time there was a, like, roof jumping off, like, moment, I was like, no.
And that's how you know we'd play the mothers of the characters instead of the actual characters, because here we are like, that's dangerous. Do you know how many things could happen to you if that went sideways? I hope you know, young man. I really hope you do.
Oh, my gosh. No. It's the first day of school, and Elle gets ready for school in her uniform. She's looking good in her yellow collared shirt with her blue tie sassily loose around her neck and a tight-fitting pair of navy blue slacks. She bends over to check in her mirror to see if she has anything in her teeth. And her pants tear straight up the backside. There is no covering it up. She yells into the rest of the house, "Dad, where are the rest of my school pants?" Her dad replies, "The dry cleaners." She quickly shuffles through the rest of her closet and finds her 9th grade tiny school skirt. She looks at it and sighs. It's what she's got to do, and puts it on, wishing that she had at least as much coverage as Britney Spears did in the "Oops, I Did It Again" video. Sadly, the tiny skirt gives very little margin of error, and when her dad sees it, he lets her know he'll drop by the dry cleaner and bring her a pair of pants to school. Elle says goodbye to her dad and her 8-year-old brother and rushes out the door to meet Lee, who is honking, honking, honking his classic car.
There was no margin of error in that skirt, because her tidy whitey undies were hanging out the backside.
Yeah.
No margin of error.
Oh, I would have loved wearing a skirt like that. I still would.
Okay.
Well, no, actually, I have to say, just about most dresses end up being like that on the back of me, because my booty's so big. It just like shortens the backside. Boop.
You know, I get that same thing anytime I buy a dress from Old Navy, because when I try it out, I'm like, oh my God, this is so cute. And then as time goes, it shrinks into a t-shirt. So there's a good couple of months where it's like going from dress to shirt, where it gets very, very short.
You have transformational clothing. I'm impressed.
Yep. Just they put a pair of leggings on them and keep on trucking with what I got.
Transformers, more than meets the eye.
Am I a dress? Am I a shirt? I'm both. Whoop-a-boppy.
One Dry Kiss has brought to you the Tamra signature line of, is it a dress or is it a shirt?
Guess what? It's both.
Elle and Lee arrive to school and everyone is checking out Elle, catcalling her, just being general asses as they walk towards the school. Elle, who is used to being completely ignored, is very uncomfortable, and Lee says, you gotta admit, your body's changed over the summer. Suddenly, a very large curly-haired guy comes up behind Elle and grabs her ass. No. Consent. Bruh, consent. Elle spins around pissed and Lee is about to step in, but Elle brushes him off. I've got this. When suddenly Noah, aka Flynn, to his friends, leaps in, throws a punch to the guy and starts beating the shit out of him. Principal jumps in and calls curly-haired guy, Flynn, and Elle into his office, and Lee is left in front of the school, exasperated, exclaiming to himself, he even steals my fights.
So curly-haired dude got form of punishment, and Elle got a day of detention for breaking the dress code. We don't see what happened to Flynn, but he's for sure getting something for throwing that punch. Which I was like, okay, was it preferable to go to school in that teeny tiny skirt that your underwear was hanging halfway out of versus just going in like a regular pair of slacks and having your dad write you a note saying, hey, sorry, pants are in the dry cleaner. Can you just give her a pass for today? Because she wound up getting detention for breaking the dress code anyways.
I know. But, you know, if you think teenage mind, you think, oh, you know what? This is something that is school approved. I will just put this on, you know. I think I can skate by.
Sure. She didn't see herself from the backside. That's why. You got to do a full twirl in the full-length mirror before you walk out. During lunch, Elle is sitting at a table in the cafeteria by herself, full of, oh, fuck my life. When a trio of very popular juniors, picture gorgeous faces, short shorts which are coordinated but different enough, and having the same lunch, which is a huge water bottle and a banana. Kind of like Mean Girls status, but 10 years later. They approach Elle, the OMG girls. That's what Elle calls them, because their names are Olivia, Mia, and Gwyneth. Oh my God. They say, I can't believe what happened in the parking lot. And Flynn looks so hot, smashing that guy's face in. Have you made out with him yet? Gwyneth chimes in, Flynn is so hot, I'd have his babies, a boy and a girl, but not at the same time.
Oh.
Elle tries logicking Gwyneth. Well, you can't really pick the gender, but they don't give a fuck.
That's what I do.
Yeah, you'd be like, actually. And they're like, no.
Yeah.
Elle is interrupted by Olivia. I heard he's in the blondes. Too bad for you, Elle. And Mia chimes in. Give me your numerals. We should def catch up. Elle starts to give her number when Mia stops her. Oh, she's just received a text. There's a she emergency in the girls' locker room. Got a jet. And the OMGs simultaneously get up and leave the table, mysteriously leaving behind a banana peel per girl that they somehow magically ate while they were sitting there, even though none of us saw it.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's a piece of performance art and they leave a banana peel behind wherever they pause for a moment. Once they've left, Lee joins Elle at the table and excitedly asks, did you mention me to Mia? He has a mega crush on the girl, and Elle reminds him that she has exactly zero pool with them, as this is the first time they've ever spoken to her. Cut to after school. Elle and Lee are at a local boutique, and while Lee tries shopping for a horrible shirt to impress Mia at the house party on Friday, they brainstorm ideas for the booth their dance club needs to have for the school carnival. A lot of popular ideas are already taken when Elle, who has been mocking Lee's attempts at fashion, teases him, saying, Mia's a varsity cheerleader. Basically, the only way she'd make out with you as if you paid for it. Suddenly, Elle and Lee look at each other, communicating with their eyes, and they say simultaneously, a kissing booth! It's perfect! All they need to do is get approval from the school counselor, and Elle assures Lee that she's got that covered.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The next day at detention, curly-haired butt-grabbing guy Elle and Flynn are all sitting amongst several other students. They're in their respective seats while a bored teacher reads Beekeeper magazine at the front of the room. Curly-haired guy passes a series of notes to Elle, first apologizing and next asking what he has to do to get her number. Elle smiles and passes a mystery note back to him. Flynn is watching the whole exchange, and he is not liking it. Not one bit.
Mm-mm.
20 minutes pass, and the teacher's sleeping, and curly-haired guy is not at his desk. Suddenly we hear, oh, Mickey, you're so fine, you blow my mind. Hey, Mickey. Hey, Mickey. And in the doorway of detention stands the very muscular, curly-haired guy wearing his football jersey on top and a teeny tiny uniform skirt on bottom.
Aww.
The room bursts into laughter and claps as the dude poses sexy in his outfit and blows kisses to the room. The stunt was just what Ellen ordered, so Curly Hair Guy, who, this just in, is named Tuppen, gets Elle's number and a date out of the deal.
Aw, he looked really cute in that skirt, actually. I was like, damn, he looks good.
You might really want to think about something along those lines because you have very nice legs.
Yeah, right? Yeah, he did.
Football pants ain't doing none of those any favors.
Now, I'm not sure what kind of bestie Lee is, because when Elle tells Lee that she gave Tuppen her number and is going out on a date with him, Lee encourages her to go on her very first date with the guy who non-consensually grabbed her ass. That having been said, they're all high schoolers, so I probably would have made the same decision back then as well.
Samesies!
Yeah. However, he is a great friend because he drops her off for her date that evening. She's wearing a cute, sparkly dress, and he leaves her with this piece of advice. If he can't see how completely baller you are, then he's not the right guy for you. He drives off, and she waits and waits and waits, but he doesn't show. So, what's a girl to do but reconvene with her bestie at the Santa Monica Pier? Lee and Elle stand on the Dance Dance Revolution machine and talk. Elle sighs. What's wrong with me? I'm 16 and the first guy who asked me out stands me up? Lee shakes his head. This is not your fault. Tuppen is a dick. I should have never told you to go out with him. You're way too good for him.
That's right, Lee. That's right. Yes.
Yes.
You should have said that last scene.
Yes.
When she said, should I go out with Tuppen? No, no, you shouldn't.
No, you shouldn't. Ella's starting to feel better when curly hair, date no-show, Tuppen, non-consensual ass grabber, shows up at the arcade. Lee tells him to buzz off, but Tuppen asks to talk with Elle, and she lets Lee know that she's fine to talk to him. And now it's confession time. Tuppen confesses. Forgive me, Father, for I've sinned. It's been 5 days since my last confession. No. He says to her, I really did want to go out with you, but Flynn told me it'd be in my best interest if I didn't go out with you. Elle scoffs. Noah? No, he wouldn't do that. It makes no sense. Tuppen continues, oh, yeah. And it's not just me he's been telling. He's been telling the other boys at school not to ask you out for a while now. Elle is outraged. What? And Tuppen realizes he said too much. Shit, he hisses. I just wanted to let you know, no boobs are worth a broken nose. Tuppen starts to walk away and Elle is indignant. Fine, she yells after him. Just to let you know, my boobs are fantastic. Some may even say breathtaking. This, of course, grabs the attention of everyone at the arcade. But fortunately, nobody pulled out their cell phones to capture the moment.
Including quite a few children.
You know, exclaiming about how breathtaking your boobs are at the arcade is a totally chill behavior.
Typical Friday night, yeah.
Yeah. Once Elle gets home, she does what any self-respecting, hey, I'd like a social life, thank you very much, teenager would do. She calls Noah Flynn and tells him to back the fuck off. He, of course, is hanging out in his room without his shirt on, and smugly says to Elle as he swivels in his desk chair, I'm sorry, but you've got a lot to learn, kiddo. Elle is pissed. Kiddo? Really? If you were here, I'd beat you with my shoe. Don't worry, gentle listeners. She's not talking about heels. Those are super stabby, and I don't think she owns a pair. Noah tries explaining. Tuppen is a player. Elle scoffs. Yeah, so are you. Noah retorts. Exactly. That's how I know he's wrong for you. You're going to thank me one day. Elle responds. Well, today is not that day. It's not your job to censor who I date. The days of you controlling my life are over. Noah smirks, and you can hear it in his voice. We'll see about that. And Elle rage hangs up the phone. On a scale of 1 being screaming into a void to 10 being super successfully communicated and negotiated world peace, how well do you think that conversation went?
I'm going to say, 2.5, because he heard her.
So message in a bottle into the void. Yeah.
But doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
It's been said. It's out there. It's not going to do any good. How well do you think that conversation went, Corinne?
I would put it at a 2, talking to a wall. Yes.
Mm-hmm. A wall with abs. Yes.
Beautiful, beautiful abs. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The next day at the student council meeting, Elle and Lee stand in front of the council at a square table full of their peers to present their idea. Elle is flustered and she shuffles her note cards around saying nervously, oh, we've put a lot of thought into... Meanwhile, Lee is making eyes at Mia, and she seems to be making eyes at him, smiling back, so he excitedly cuts off Elle, blurting, a kissing booth! We want to do a kissing booth! Elle throws her note cards up in the air like confetti because they're fucking useless now due to Lee's premature blurtation. The council is initially excited and then grossed out and then excited again, particularly when Elle assures everyone that Noah Flynn will be one of the kissers. Oh, and this is just, I'm so old. I fucking like played out this kissing booth in my head and I was like, it sounded like a mononucleosis driven nightmare. A bowl of kiss soup with a dozen other people spit mingling around in your mouth. That's the other alternate title to this movie. Kissing booth, a bowl of spit soup right in your mouth.
Mmm, yum.
Yeah, yeah. I had to go back and fill that in because that's what I saw when they did the kissing booth. And I was just like, ah, ah, ah.
Yeah, there's a kissing montage later where I'm like,
Anyways, I'm fine.
So, Tam, what you're saying is that we at One Dry Kiss want to put on our own kissing booth and head up each side of it.
That's because we would not have any tongue, because we seriously would just do one dry kiss. It's like, wow, that's it. Might not even touch anything. Might just be an air kiss. That's the driest kiss of all. And although Lee and Elle in their student council meeting assure the students that there will not be any tongue, there's lots of tongue. There's a lot of tongue. A lot of tongue coming down the line. It's like a water slide that you pay $5 for with spit and tongue. Anyways, let's not talk about it till we have to. No, let's talk about it.
When the passions overtake you, you know, you just gotta go for it.
I get that, but not with an assembly line of your fellow classmates. Oh, Lord. Okay, I'm back. All right. On Friday, the biggest bestie news is that uber popular super snob Mia, Corinne gave me whatever she
I know, I Mia, like I've rubbed off on you.
Mia wants to make sure Lee's going to the party that night.
Ooh!
And Elle, now that they have the green light for the fundraising booth, texts a bunch of classmates asking if they'd volunteer to smooch at their kissing booth. And all of them decline. Reject? Say no. Say hell no. However, Elle still hasn't approached her largest hurdle, which is asking Flynn. That night, the party is raging. Do you want to paint a picture of this house party, Corinne?
It's sort of like house parties that are portrayed in movies that I never went to in real life. But it's got a ton of students at the very posh modern glass house with people doing shots, people drinking beer, mm-hmm. beer pong,
yeah.
all kinds of your traditional party activities, and like most of the school there.
And they're being surprisingly respectful too. It's like no fights broke out, nothing's broken yet, there's no puke in the pool. This isn't like any party I went to. Now, mind you, I didn't go to any parties like they did in that house, but that house looks like Lee and Noah's parents are drug dealers.
That's a secret.
Oh, anyways, the OMG girls are there too at the party, and they wave Elle over and peer pressure her into taking a shot of something that tastes like green. Here, Elle, drink this. What is it? I don't know, but it tastes like green. And then ask Elle if Noah has agreed to be in the kissing booth yet. She looks over at him across the room, and he's got his own personal kissing booth with a very pierced lady, and admits, I haven't had the chance to ask him yet, and he looks really busy right now.
Uh-huh.
But the OMG girls have an agenda. Go, 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 they say, and go, 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 she does. Straight over to Noah, tapping him on the shoulder. He stops kissing the girl long enough to glance at Elle and say, I don't know where Lee is. And then resumes his la 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 la. She taps him on the shoulder again. What do you want? He says, irritated. And she actually asks him, the OMG girls want to know if you're going to be doing the kissing booth. Noah scoffs, no. And is about to resume kissing when Elle tries bargaining. Okay, what do you want me to do? Wash your motorcycle? What do I have to do? His makeout partner has had enough and pushes her on the forehead, stating, get out of here, loser.
Ooh.
Elle is full of, what the fuck just happened? And angrily responds, did you just lay hands on me? The girl practically spits. Easy Bake Oven is downstairs, bitch.
Ooh.
Is the shit about to go down? No, because Noah nips it in the bud. He addresses his makeout partner. Okay, you should go. Makeout girl is irate and confused. What? And Noah calmly continues, Elle is important to my family, which kind of makes her important to me. Makeout girl is incredulous. Are you for serious? And he iterates in a smooth, cool tone. It's just so smooth you have to keep the three or four more O's in there. Smooth, cool tone. Leave. She rolls her eyes and leaves in a huff.
In a huff.
Bumping against Elle on her way out and making the OMG girls who are watching from a distance squeal with excitement. Elle apologizes for ruining his makeout sesh, but he's not that disappointed. She's persistent, asks him about the kissing booth again and again. He shuts her down. She heads back to the OMG girls, who squeal excitedly at Elle and hand her a shot of something that tastes like pink. They ask if Flynn is in, and Elle responds cockily. Between us girls, Flynn basically does whatever I tell him, and they all cheers their shots.
Yay! Ooh, liar, liar, pants on fire.
I just hope that doesn't, that better not get back to Noah. Oh, so Elle says she owns you? Yeah. That she has both of your balls in her back pocket and you do whatever she says.
Well, you know, she kind of does.
Well, not yet. We're not to that part yet.
And if this were a Lifetime movie, thus would begin Elle's tragic descent into alcoholism and drug abuse. However, this is not a Lifetime movie, so instead we see Elle having a great time and doing more shots, 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 as she dances awesomely with Lee and trounces mansplainers at video games. However, the evening starts to take a turn as she gets progressively more drunk. She is standing up on an air hockey table with a pitcher of beer in one hand when she realizes, you know what, I'm really hot. She sets down the pitcher and starts tugging at her dress. Lee looks on in horror, but doesn't try to stop her. And the guys go wild, hoping she takes it off, take it off, which she actually does.
Why doesn't Lee stop her? Why? That should be on the friend list. Don't let your best friend get naked. Number 27 or something. It should be on there somewhere.
For realsy. I would be trying to talk you off that ledge. I'm just saying, Tam.
Yes, you would. Yes, I know you would. You'd be like, no, come down, come down, come on. I've got cookies. Yeah. You want some cookies? Yeah. They're in the oven, fresh baked. I'd be like, cookie? Oh, yeah. Okay, I can swim later. It's fine.
Are you hungry? I've got some popcorn. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You wouldn't have anything, but you'd at least get me off the table and distract me long enough that I'd be like, what was I doing? I don't remember.
Exactly. Salty, sweet. And then you'd be like, yes. And I'd be like, okay, now let's have a little seat here. We'll take a little nappy nap. Okay. Get some water into you.
Oh, I remember one high school party that I went to. Stupidly, I didn't realize, because every single 80s movie where somebody gets drunk, you give them coffee. But my high school ass saw somebody that was super drunk and tried to give him coffee, but did not realize in my young naivete that I didn't know how to make coffee. So I basically put a bunch of coffee grounds in hot water and stirred it, thinking it was instant. It was not instant. Oh. And needless to say, said fella that I was trying to help out did not enjoy the coffee or appreciate the coffee. And I was very offended until years later when I figured out, oh, that's not how you make it. Oh, gotcha.
It is if you have Nescafe. The simple coffee solution.
We did not have Nescafe. We did not have Nescafe.
Well, I think that's very nice of you. And horrible to drink. Elle takes off her dress and she has a super cute black bra and panty set on, which covers all the areas of a cute but covering bikini. And she also has an amazing six pack, which is like, what? So hard for women to get. Ah, I was awed by her six pack. Anyways, go on with your bad self, Elle. Of course, a guy whips out his camera for pics for the yearbook. Obs, and Elle exclaims, you know what? We should all go skinny dipping. People start tearing off items of clothing and leaping into the pool as Elle wobbles unsteadily from her perch. It looks like she's about to fall when she gets scooped over someone's shoulder and she is left drunkenly puzzled as she's firefighter carried away, calling out to her carrier, who are you? A girl princess or a boy princess? You smell good.
The next morning, Elle wakes up in a cozy bed feeling like shit. And then she's filled with horror as she realizes she's in Noah's bed wearing Noah's football jersey. And she quickly looks under the covers. Whew, she's still got her underwear on.
Yay. Yay.
Just then, Noah enters the room with a towel wrapped around his waist and the rest of his dewy fresh skin exposed. Banner writing, Corinne. Banner writing. And Elle is feeling slightly less sucky seeing his beautifully tousled hair and the rest of his beautiful self. He glances over at her. Sorry, didn't mean to wake you, just getting some clothes. And I call serious bullshit on this. He knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing.
Bow, bow, bow. Oh, yeah.
He probably saw her asleep and was like, oh, hold on. Oh, I gotta get some clothes out. Oh, you're awake.
By the way, you look kind of sure cute in my football jersey. I mean, hey, how's it going?
And did you see me? Did you see me scantily clad in this towel with my dewy skin glistening in the morning light? Did you notice that? Just checking.
I call myself the hangover cure.
Oh my God, that's such a good line. I'm just going to incorporate that into the repertoire.
Oh.
You wake up next to a stranger after a night of drinking, they call me the hangover cure. Elle face palms and asks hesitantly, so how bad was I? Noah chuckles, well, Shelley, you were about to strip off all your clothes to go skinny dipping in front of a lot of guys, but I grabbed you before you took off too much, so it wasn't that bad. Oh, and you threw up on your dress. But Shelley, this is what I was talking about. Elle is filled with too many regrets from last night and has too much of a hangover to be feisty back to Noah, and she apologizes. I'm so sorry, and I hope I didn't snore. He smiles smugly. Ugh, I slept in the guest room, you ding-dong. Elle plays it super cool. Oh, yeah, of course you did. She gets up from the bed trying to tug his football jersey, which he likely wears as a half shirt because that shit is short.
Yeah.
Down her legs and realizes it ain't covering anything. You saw me in my underwear, huh? He laughs. Yes, Elle, I saw you in your underwear. She cringes even more, walking over to the floor-to-ceiling window and wrapping a curtain around her lower half. She nods towards a pair of shorts that are on the floor. Toss me the shorts. He stares at her with a mischievous grin and shakes his head. Noah, come on. Noah! He chuckles at her situation, and as he relents, she decides that she'll go get him herself, which causes the two to collide. Elle falls on top of him, sending them both tumbling around on the floor together and wrapping them in the curtain like a teenage burrito. One of her arms gets caught between her legs and Noah's legs, and oh damn, she just felt his dick!
Ooh.
And they quickly roll the other direction to get untangled. Elle springs up, grabbing the shorts and chucking them on. She swiftly heads for the door when Noah stops her deadpanning. Aren't you forgetting something? She stops and turns around. He says, my t-shirt. She starts to anxiously whip it off over her head when he stops her. Hey, I was just kidding. Get out, dork. Elle does, and heads directly over to Lee's room, where he, as the bestie he is, has made her an emergency survival kit with granola, sports drinks, and acids, and an epic dose of awkward shame. Good man. Then he informs her that she let everyone last night know that not only was Noah going to work the kissing booth, so were the OMG girls. Not a good thing.
Nah. This next section is entitled Manipulating the OMGs. And if I were to title this movie, it would be called School Year of Lies.
And if I was going to name this movie, I think I said I was going to name it The Kissing Booth, a bowl of spit soup right in your mouth.
Yes, yes.
I'm just going to keep saying it over and over again in case they decide to make a fourth, because I know there's three, right? There's Kissing Booth 1, Kissing Booth 2, Kissing Booth. If they want to make a fourth one, they can have that one. They can have that
I like
title.
How you demonstrated how you could count. I appreciate that.
Did the hands help? Did the emphatic gestures with my karate? Yes, yes. So, I was doing that straight for the gentle listeners who can't see me at all.
Well, you know, it's important. It's important to have full body movements. That's what I do anyways. So Lee and Elle hatch a plan that Elle implements on Monday during lunch when they're back at school. As Lee sits at a nearby table watching Elle super casually walk by the OMG's table, and much to her relief, they call her over to sit with them. As she sits down between Gwen and Olivia, Lee frantically mouths to Elle, ask Mia if she likes me. Elle actually does ask, and Mia glances over at Lee, who sits at the table with a gigantic cheesy grin on his face. She turns back to Elle and says, yeah, he's cute. He just needs to learn how to dress. The table chuckles, and then Gwen asks, "But more importantly, everything is set for the kissing booth, right?" Elle sees her opening and begins to set them up by lying. She says, "I heard that Flynn likes one of you." The OMG girls lean in closer as she continues whispering conspiratorially to them. "Rumor has it, if the person he likes is working the booth, then he'll be there too." The OMGs all clasp their hands and squeal. Then Gwen says to Elle, "Wait, we didn't tell you? Now that we're besties, we're doing the kissing booth just for you." And she boops Elle on the nose with her finger. Elle smiles nervously and gushes, "Thank you, guys." Mia responds, "You can call us bitches." Elle looks uneasy, but keeps on smiling. "Thank you." She trails off, and Mia looks at her expectantly, and Elle squeaks out, "Bitches." The OMGs chorus gleefully, "You're welcome."
"You can call me bitch, Corinne. I when you intro me now from here on out, just call me your bitch." No, oh, no, never mind. That doesn't sound
my
right.
My number one bitch.
My number one bitch.
Tamakosio. Yeah. After school, Lee and Elle start working on making their booth. But do they? Instead, they end up getting into a paint fight, and Elle ends up blearily walking down the school hallway to go to the bathroom to get cleaned up. Her face is very covered in paint, and she can't see well. She enters the room, heading to the sink, whips off her shirt. She's wearing a bikini top underneath, the one that Tamara said made her boobs look like traffic cones.
Yep, I stand by that statement.
I'm painting the picture. And she starts washing her face until she sees out of her periphery a guy walk by her. I'm curious, have you ever accidentally ended up in the wrong restroom?
Yes, once. I used to go in the wrong restroom a bunch of times on purpose because their line was always smaller. But I literally like walked into a restroom, but was like, "Oh, girls don't have urinals," and just hightailed it right back out.
Yeah. Same. And I've also intentionally gone into the men's restroom at certain times when I've been like, "There is no one here. I'm just jetting in and jetting on out."
Yeah. Usually I start a pee-pee revolution because I'll go into the men's restroom and then that opens the floodgates and then the women start standing. They start going into the men's restroom and the men come and they're like, "Fuck." And they get all mad and they're like, "Now you know how we feel, bitches."
So Elle sees out of her periphery a guy, just like we see out of our periphery urinals. And we're like, "Oh, no." A guy walked by her in a towel. She realizes, shit, she's in the boys' locker room. Just then, Noah Flynn approaches her and tells her to get lost, but she's tired of him telling her what to do. You know, as we were doing the script, I'm like, oh my God, I am so L. Like, other than like being super cute, I am so L. I am like,
you're not L for various reasons that I will go into later. Oh. Because while we're here in this spot, in this point of L, I would say yes.
Yeah.
But later on, I'm like, I don't see any of Corinne in, you know, no Corinne in there. Not a lot. Nope.
Elle is over it, just like I would be. No, I've had enough. I can do what I want. The boys double down on their wooing while Noah glowers and looks super pissed. She then takes her t-shirt, which she's been holding in front of her chest, and sexily drops it and does a little dance around the locker room, looking, as one guy says, like a sexy Braveheart, as her face is completely covered in a couple different colors of paint.
Fair statement.
Yeah, I know. I was like, that is an excellent line. After her lap is done, she picks up her shirt, slings it over her shoulder, and struts triumphantly out of the locker room, walking saucily past Noah, who has kind of accepted it by now, and is inwardly chuckling at the whole situation as the guys in the locker room hoot and holler, high-fiving each other. Once again, Noah isn't wearing a shirt. It's like a Groundhog's Day of shirtless Noah. Oh, look, there he is again. Oh, look, there he is again.
Yes. It would be easier to count the scenes that he has a shirt on in versus one where he doesn't have one.
Yeah.
And now the next scene is called The Kissing Booth. It's the night of the Los Angeles Country Day School annual fiesta fundraiser at Old Acapulco Bay Amusement Park. Just rolls off the tongue saying that, doesn't it? And since this movie was in L.A. and I did not recognize the Old Acapulco Bay Amusement Park, I actually looked that one up to see if it was a real place or not that I just didn't know about. And it's not. The location was actually called the Rotonga Junction, which is a theme park that is in Century City, but not Century City, California, Century City, Cape Town, South Africa, where a lot of this movie was filmed.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting, too, because I'm like, oh, so like establishing shots are in L.A. and most of the other where you don't know exactly where it is in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So at the amusement park, all the fundraising booths are hopping except for the kissing booth, which has an opening soon sign on it. Ella approaches Noah and pleads, I know we don't see eye to eye on things, but I'm desperate. Please, Noah, come to the booth. It would mean a lot to me. He looks at her smugly. Well, the independent L. Evans, who doesn't like to be told what to do, is begging someone else for help. She looks at him with resignation. It is what it is. I thought it would be nice for you to do something for people you care about. And Tamara says, ooh, way to lay it on thick, L. That's a healthy serving of guilt right there.
I think he owes her after he's been like cock blocking her game so that she doesn't get asked out on any dates and stuff.
Please. He thinks he's looking out for her best interest. He's not going to have that much insight to be like, oh, I'm being a dick. Let me go ahead and do something for you as payback. No, 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 no. Noah's not that kind of guy.
I'm just saying is all.
I kind of think it was shitty that she tried roping him into it without asking him first. And now she's scrambling to get him to actually participate to cover her own ass because she wrote checks that her butt couldn't cash.
I think her butt should have cashed them in by saying, you owe me, you asshole.
We'll see how good that would work out in kissing booth 4.
What, you mean there's a kissing booth 1, a kissing booth 2, a kissing booth 3?
Kissing booth 4, a bowl of spit soup right in your mouth. She walks off, leaving Noah to ponder her statement, but not have a touch of regrets because he lets her go. Some time has passed, and the kissing booth is finally open. Lee is doing his best Carnival Barker impression, shouting, come one, come all, behold the power and raw intensity of a kiss from one of our beautiful people. A ticket and a mint, which we encourage each and every single one of you to use, is going to be $5. All sales and epic smooches are final. He continues explaining the kissing booth has a twist. The kissers are going to be blindfolded, so they don't know who they are lip-locking with. At first, I didn't get this. I was like, why would they do that? But when we cue the kiss montage with the OMGs, Tuppen, and many others who gamely volunteer and get their kiss on, we notice it's because they're as enthusiastic for everybody. So when they're lip-locking, everybody gets the same attention because they don't know who they're swapping spit with. Whereas if it was a nerdy or an ugly or a smelly person that the kisser didn't like, then they'd probably just be like, I am not kissing you. So I think that was actually a good strategy.
They'd be like, meh, air kiss. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are getting it on. There's tongue, there's lips.
Those mints are for a reason.
Yeah. Yeah. They're getting all up in there. All up in there. However, as the evening wears on, there's a problem. Flynn was promised, and Flynn is not there. But Lee has a solution, because he's a Flynn, too! Flynn's his last name, so technically it works. So when Elle announces that Flynn is ready to kiss, the ladies who have been eagerly anticipating Noah Flynn actually get Lee Flynn instead!
Yay!
A cluster of ladies at the front of the line are pissed and rip up their tickets in disappointment. The OMGs look like they stepped in dog do, and Mia, Lee's crush, says disdainfully, ugh, the only reason I talked to that dork was to get his brother to do the booth.
Boo.
A lot of the girls leave the line, and Lee stands forlornly, alone at his stand, until a gorgeous dark-haired girl approaches, stating, well then, I guess it's my turn. She kisses Lee, and there must have been something magic in that kiss because he takes off his blindfold and it is love at first sight. The two have heart eyes for each other, and Lee essentially ditches Elle at the kissing booth to hang with the new hottie he just met. As Elle watches them walking away, she reminds herself of rule number 18. Always be happy for your bestie's success. Elle narrates, "That one has always been easy for me to follow."
Aww. Just then, her train of thought is interrupted by Olivia coming out and complaining, "I can't do it. I can't do it." She's balking at the idea of kissing the nerdy guy she already unknowingly kissed in the previous montage. Currently, the kissing booth is on break. She's up next, and she saw him in line. Mia whispers to her fellow OMGs, it's payback time for Elle for lying about Flynn. And on the fly, she concocts a story about how none of the OMGs can possibly go out there because Olivia's ex is next in line, and kissing him would be a betrayal. They slap a blindfold on Elle, who has never been kissed before, and push her out onto the stage. And what will happen to our fabulous Elle? Will her first kiss be with the nerdy, short, curly-haired guy who, when he kissed the very enthusiastic, I can't remember which OMG girl it was, he did a weird pucker with his lips and made his tongue go, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, nope.
I do have to say that that montage was a lot of fun, though, because I don't think we expressed. They're also having a great time when they get kissed and they have the blindfold on. People are cheering. People are ooing. Like, they have basically an audience for the kiss-a-thon, and everybody is thoroughly enjoying it. Kissies, kissers, and the ones waiting in line to watch.
Yeah, it kind of becomes this bonding thing where everybody's just like excited and happy to be part of this whole thing. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's like an experience for both sides. Like,
yeah. Even though it's also kind of gross because, as you said, spit soup. But
spit soup. It's been you're kissing her and also that guy and that guy and that guy and that guy who kissed her before you.
Yeah.
Enjoy.
Tamara's really fond of the whole kissing booth idea.
No. I would be very fond of the kissing booth idea if it was just one person. If you can sell one ticket for just an exorbitant amount of money and just be done instead of $5 in a mint per ticket and having to kiss like 20 people. What?
That's like the bachelor date auction that you're talking about. Yeah.
I don't watch that either.
No, I'm not saying the bachelor. I'm saying like bachelor date auctions.
They have to kiss a bunch of people?
No. Where you bid on a guy and they take you out on a date.
Oh, got you. Okay.
Yes.
My scenario is like the bachelor date auction. I was very confused. Yes. I'm sorry.
Well, we find out what happens with Elle and her first kiss experience after the break. And we're back. Unbeknownst to the OMG girls, Noah has approached the booth, and the nerdy guy trying to earn some cool points offers Noah cutsies. So Noah is now first in line. Elle stumbles out onto the stage, and Noah catches her as she falls forward with the blindfold on. She grabs onto his arms and nervously says, "Sorry, ooh, muscles." He wordlessly leads her to the kissing station. The OMG girls, initially gleeful when they poke their heads through the red curtain ready to watch her kiss the nerd, are full of regrets when they see that it's Noah Flynn on stage. Elle babbles on. "Sorry, I know you're expecting Olivia, so if you don't want to kiss me, I'll understand. And I haven't kissed anyone before. Not that I haven't wanted to. It's just that it hasn't worked out. Like I punched Ron Geller in the sixth grade during 7 minutes in heaven." The crowd chuckles, and Noah just waits. Elle continues her ramble. "Sophomore year dance, a romantic song came on, and I was dancing with Randy Melrose, and I was like, it's going to happen. And then it didn't because she's cut off by Noah kissing her. And it's a fucking good kiss. They pull apart and she takes off her blindfold and she's staring into the eyes of Noah, who is staring into her eyes. And the kiss tractor beam is fucking strong and they kiss again, passionately and thirstily. When they finally pull apart, they realize that it's not just them there. They have an audience, and they slowly turn their heads towards the crowd, which automatically bursts into applause with enthusiastic woos. Elle is super embarrassed, and Noah says glibly, "Relax, Shelley. It was just a kiss." And the excitement and warm fuzzies that Elle had felt moments before drain out of her, replaced with dread. "Right. It was just a kiss. Did it really mean nothing to him?" Flynn says, "All right. See you around. Keep up the good work. Claps her on the shoulder and walks off the stage. He's like, bro. She's puzzled and a bit bereft, and then is suddenly filled with panic when she realizes Lee. She's going to need to tell Lee about this, and there is a very clear rule number 9. Relatives of your best friends are off limits. So she runs off the stage in a panic to find Lee.
And when she does find him and pulls him away from his lady love to chat, she lets him know that the kissing booth is crushing it. Lead with the good news, Elle. Lead with the good news. Beating out all the other booths put together. And then she slips in and I kissed your brother. No big. Lee's face drops. This is a big. But Elle assures him it meant nothing. It was part of the kissing booth. Lee's brain hamster is working in overdrive, trying to reconcile the kiss with his relationship with his bestie. Finally, he says, okay, just as long as the other parts of your body don't kiss, because then we couldn't be friends anymore. Remember rule number 9? She does. And returns to finish managing the kissing booth while he returns to spend time with his lady. So he just kind of like ditched his responsibilities at the kissing booth to just go hang out with the girl. I'd be like, no, bitch, you can meet him in 2 hours when we've like done this thing. Elle is a better friend than me. I'd be like, hell no, you are not leaving. How am I supposed to kiss people with a blindfold on and collect money and hand out mints? You tell me that.
I don't know. But Elle manages to hold down the kissing fort.
Yeah, she does.
Later that evening, Elle closes down the kissing booth and starts jogging home. Typically, she'd get a ride from Lee, but with his new love and all, he has other things on his mind. Elle starts jogging home when Noah pulls up behind her on his motorcycle. It's starting to rain, and Noah convinces Elle to let him give her a ride home, even though previously she had turned him down, as much like Tamara, she didn't want to ride on the back of a motorcycle, aka Death Trap. They are heading home, but the rain starts coming down in sheets, like it is today in Oakland, gentle listeners. Elle clings to him and is honestly kind of liking that, but doesn't like how the motorcycle is slipping on the roads. Eventually, Noah needs to pull over because it's just raining too hard. And, oh, hey, look at that. He conveniently pulls over near an enclosed glass gazebo. What a coincidence.
Good thing that glass gazebo was there so they can have shelter from the rain. Am I right, Corinne?
You are so right. I can't believe it all came together like that.
I know. Imagine what luck. They dash to the gazebo for cover from the rain, breathless. Noah is wearing a shirt, but it's completely wet and clinging to his body because, of course, it is. So that only counts halfway in the is Noah wearing a shirt tally. We got him at 50% in this scene. Elle is wearing his motorcycle jacket and a shirt underneath. And both of them are wearing pants. Obviously pants, Corinne writes, because she needs to point out that they are not Porky Pig in it in the gazebo.
Yes.
Elle looks at Noah, who is standing on the other side of the gazebo, soulfully looking out at the rain. She's got hungry eyes. One look at him and she can't disguise. She's got hungry eyes. Corinne put that in verbatim with the lyrics, so I would sing it. You're welcome, Corinne.
I really appreciate it. That was beautiful.
She runs up to Noah and pulls him down for a kiss, but he pulls away. They look at each other wordlessly. He stares. She stares. They stare. And then he dives down to her for another kiss. He's 6'5 and she's 5'4. They might have needed one of those boxes to stand on like Reese Witherspoon and Vince Vaughn had in the 4 Christmas movies posters, but they don't. They have to wing it with their size variation, but they kiss hungrily for a few moments before Elle pulls away. Wait, I don't want to be another one of your conquests. Noah frowns. Is that what you think of me? And she replies sadly, that's what everybody thinks of you. Noah takes it in and then says, you want to know the truth? You're the only girl who doesn't fall at my feet, and it's driving me crazy. It's one of the things I like about you. You're sweet, but you call me out on my shit. And I don't know what all this means. I just like hanging out with you. It feels right. Elle confesses, "Oh, I'm so confused right now." And Noah bends down and kisses her again. He pulls back, their foreheads resting on each other, and asks, "Did that clear anything up?" She smiles. "I think we need to try that again." And they kiss some more. More! More! It's passionate and not dry at all, until they're interrupted by a flashlight shining in their face. Elle's immediate reaction is, "We're gonna die!" And then the voice says, "Flynn, is that you? I've told you not to bring any more girls around here." And then Elle flips from being in panic mode to pissed mode. "What? You brought me to your hookup spot?" She shucks off his jacket and throws at him, yelling, "Unbelievable!" She starts walking out of the gazebo as the security guard chuckles at the situation, when Elle turns back around, grabbing his jacket and firmly stating, "I'm still mad at you, but I'm cold and I need a ride home." Noah stares at her and she yells, "Now!" Noah looks at the security guard and says, "Thanks, Andrew." And Andrew just chuckles again. Andrew's really effective birth control.
Andrew seems like a pretty good guy.
Yeah. And thankfully, the rain has lightened up and it's safe for them to hit the road. So Noah brings Elle back home, dropping her off in the driveway. As she hands him his coat, Flynn says, "I still meant what I said." She starts walking towards the house and he asks her retreating figure, "See you tomorrow?" She doesn't respond, but we can all see that smile on her face. I'm pretty sure inside she's happy, dancing and squealing, "He likes me, he likes me, he really, really likes me."
Oh my gosh, I would be so thrilled if something like that happened in high school.
I know, I'd probably be okay even with the motorcycle back then. Right now I'm like, oh gosh, golly, no. Do you know the statistics of people that get in accidents on motorcycles? But 17, 16-year-old Chan would be like, fuck yeah.
However, nothing kills a new love buzz more than one's parents questioning them about said new love as soon as they get through the door. As soon as Elle gets home, her dad is waiting up. My parents always would just go to bed. So whenever I would come home, they'd be asleep.
That's because they didn't love you. My parents would always be asleep when...
It's because they didn't love me. It would have been different if you had been living at the house. They would have stayed up for you, but not for me.
No. To be fair, my parents were also asleep when I came home, but that's because I snuck out.
Well, that too. As soon as Elle gets home, her dad is waiting up and he questions her as to why Noah dropped her off instead of Lee. She brushes it off, but he is suspicious.
You probably saw that smile on her face too.
The love smile. It is unmistakable, that like love smile. Once she's in her room, she makes a pros and cons list. Under pros were the very noble reasons: hot, good kisser, smells yummy. Under cons, Lee forbids it, rule number 9. Stupid motorcycle. Dad, he's controlling, all we do is fight, and he's a player. And once Elle lays it all out that way, I'm like, run girl, run! The call is coming from inside the house! But she does not run. Elle closes her laptop, and then she gets a text from Lee asking her if she made it home all right. Elle narrates, rule number 6, if you can't tell your friends what you're doing, you probably shouldn't be doing it. Which is a pretty good rule of thumb, particularly if you're in a toxic relationship. If you find that you're hiding most of your relationship from your friends, it's likely time to get out. Get out. Gentle listeners, get out.
Well, Corinne, I guess it's time for me to come clean. I've been reluctant to bring it up, but this movie and that last statement has, the statement has given me the courage to tell you that.
Yes.
Larry doesn't use pirouettes when he makes me root beer floats.
What? Oh, dump the fucker.
I know. Him. I didn't want to say it. I was like waiting. I was like, when do I bring this up? When?
What kind of a boyfriend is he? That's like giant red waving flags right there. No pirouettes, no pussy is what I say.
Oh, that just put all kinds of pictures in my head of pirouettes and pussy. I don't know what to do with myself. Ay, God. The visual's coming at me. Fast and furious. Oh, boy.
Pirouettes are the thin wafer cookie with that's coated in chocolate that's rolled up in sort of the shape of a cigar, but it's hollow through the center so you can use it as a straw.
that we mentioned in I Love You, Man, our last episode.
Yes.
Oh, we do like talking about pirouettes, don't we? Mm. Speaking of a red flag moment, yes. That weekend, there's a beach party. But hey, classmates are running around in swim trunks and bikinis. It might be like a senior ditch day because a lot of the school's there. There's a slip and slide that has been placed on top of a hill of sand that runs into a dugout gully. That looked like really fun, though. I'm like, I want to fucking do that because they start from the top of the hill, then they slide down the hill, and then they wound up in a soft, sandy pool of water that they dug out at the end. It's amazing. But in addition to the very fun-looking slip and slide, there's also kegs and beer and drinking games. Party, party, party. And I'm calling serious bullshit on this because they're like right by the parking area of the beach, which makes me think that they're in a very well-trafficked area. And seriously, like, how long would all that underage drinking actually go on in L.A. if it was real, the real, real world? Maybe 2.5 minutes.
I would say it matters how much money you have. And these are affluent kids. So I think that it may actually work out depending on the wealth and the neighborhood.
That's true, but then they should have kind of like done better. For example, in the movie She's All That, they went to like a hidden cove.
Right.
And like where they had to walk downstairs and go a quarter of the mile to get to the water. And that would have been more believable for like a all-out senior ditch day party. But this one is just, you would have had cops stop at least 6 or 7 times by, even if they didn't stop it because they're rich. Yeah, we're, no. Mm-mm. Nope, 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 nope. Elle sees Noah being tackled by half of the female student body during a casual game of touch football. Well, not touch football, because they're tackling him, so. Well, and touching him at the same time.
I know, they're touching him. Both things. So, there you go.
And Noah sees Elle rocking it in a bikini. They're both avoiding each other for the most part, but also keeping secret tabs on what the other is doing. Meanwhile, Lee is completely distracted by his new lady love and doesn't suspect a thing. The sunny day turns into night and they get a bonfire blazing and some tiki torches out. Also call bullshit, they would never allow bonfires on any beaches in LA. Anyways, Elle goes to grab a beer and is approached by a jock-looking guy named Warren, who had been at the infamous Flynn House party. He tries talking her up, and it's clear that Elle's uncomfortable around him, but polite. However, when he mentioned that she never got to finish her skinny dip at Flynn's party,
ew,
and grabs her hand, saying, "You need a hot tub stat."
Ew.
He tries to pull her away, and Elle forcefully says no, more and more loudly, finally managing to yank her hand away before Noah jumps in from like out of nowhere and informs the guy, "She said no!" It looks like they're going to fight, but Elle talks Noah down and asks him to take her home. As they're walking away, Warren, the dickhead, yells after Noah, "I get it! You're sad because you're stuck with your little brother's sloppy seconds."
Ooh.
Suddenly, Noah gets all Hulk smash and turns around, dashing across the sand and tackling Warren to the ground. Everyone stares at the altercation and Elle runs off in a tizzy. Noah looks around, realizing that his temper exploded again, and sees Elle hightailing it off the beach. He jogs after her. "Elle, Elle, wait!" By this time, she's hoofing it across the parking lot, and Noah yells after her, "Get in the car, Elle!" And then slams his fist down hard, saying, "Get in the car, Elle!" This stops her dead in her tracks, and there's a few moments of silence between them when Noah earnestly adds, "Please." This scene, I don't get why Elle ran away, because in the beginning of the movie, she's pretty self-assured with Noah. She's got like agency. She knows what she wants. She kissed him in the gazebo and can handle herself. And even in the beginning of the movie, they have this whole like montage of her and Lee growing up. And there's a point in time where Noah beats up Lee and then Elle chastises him and gives him a once over for picking on him, her bestie, his brother. And so the fact that she turns into a wilting flower at this new altercation because she's seen him fight before, she knows that's his forte, and then she just like runs does not make sense to me.
I mean, it makes total sense to me.
Okay, explain, because I don't get it.
Because she's tired of him just going and kicking people's asses. And so it's not that she's like a wilting flower. It's that she's done. She's over it. She's like, fuck off with yourself. If you want to behave like a fool, I am leaving. And that's what she's doing.
Which I can understand and I get that. But then when he chases after her and is like, get in the car. And she does. I'm like, wait, what? No. If you're sick of his shit and his anger problems and then he yells at you, then you keep walking. You do not turn around and you don't get in the car. So it's almost like this is the line of demarcation in the movie where there's an L that I see at the beginning and then the L that happens after the hot tub debacle.
I understand why she gets in the car. It's late. She's been drinking. It's dark. She's over by the beach. She's not near home.
But I also think that she just told Warren, she told Noah, take me home to try to defuse the situation. I don't think she really wanted to go home in that point in time. I think she was just like, this is an easy way out for me to cut this. If I remove him from the situation, it'll be better and easier for everyone. Yeah.
And we do find out that Elle does get into the car. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He apologizes and says, you think I meant to fall for my brother's best friend? Elle looks over at him with a pained expression on her face, but doesn't respond. She turns to look back out the window and realizes, wait, we're not going home. He explains, I want to show you something. And next we see them sitting somewhere with a beautiful view of the Los Angeles Valley below them. Elle takes in the view and then says bitterly, how many girls have you made out with here? Noah replies, I only come here by myself. Until now. Elle shakes her head. Ooh, you're good. Do you know how good that sounds? You're such a player. You haven't changed. What's the difference between what just happened? And Noah looks over at her with a soft smile. The difference is you. Elle shakes her head with a small smile on her face. You're crazy. He responds, I'm crazy about you. Elle takes a moment to reflect and pulling on her Lee friendship experience, she figures, you know what makes for a great relationship? Rules.
Mm. Yes. Oh, that's hot. Mm.
She turns to Noah and states, all right, here's how we're going to do this. Rules. He agrees and she says, rule one, no more fighting. He smugly says, done. She continues, rule two, no more telling me what to do. He looks at her sincerely, cross my heart. And she finishes, rule three, nobody can know until I figure out a way to tell Lee. He practically boops her on the nose, responding, you're cute when you're bossy. Half frustrated, half flattered, she responds, I'm serious, Noah. He responds, flicking on the kiss tractor beam, so am I. You're really, really cute. She stares, he stares, they stare. And Elle asks, promise? And he softly responds, I promise. And they seal it with a super sweet soft kiss. And then they make sweet, sweet love to each other. But fortunately, we don't see that. I don't want to watch high schoolers having sex. No, thank you.
It's not going to be nearly as good as they make it out to be in the movies. Is that what, 30, 45 seconds?
Yeah. And then they fall asleep, butt ass naked outside. No ticks here. No. And turns out they are under the Hollywood sign. And I'm like, not possible, but okay.
I know. I'm like, you know how many cameras and fences you have to get over to get to that little spot that they're in? Like a couple years back, somebody on 420, I think, put two huge tarps in front of the two O's in Hollywood to turn it into Hollyweed. I mean, this was a major undertaking. First of all, I don't know how they got it up there. But second of all, it was only up for like maybe 2 hours because they shut that shit down real, real quick.
Oh, yeah. No, they keep an eye on that stinking Hollywood sign. So they would know if two teenagers were doing the bed dance right underneath the Hollywood sign. On top of it, like Tam says, massive fencing. And the area is not where you would want to be lying down on the ground. It's like rocky, broken glass,
uncomfortable. Ooh, for your first time. So romantic.
Yeah.
What letter were they in front of? The O. That's fitting.
Whoa. The oo laying out underneath both. Yes.
I would say, though, as far as this movie goes, though, the tryst under the Hollywood sign is probably more likely than the underage drinking right on the beach.
True, true, true. And thus begins the sneaking around. Elle hiding under Noah's bed while his mom gathers his laundry. What his mom's doing his laundry? I will tell you, my parents... Okay, ironically, as an adult, now, my dad does more laundry for me than he ever did for me when I was a youth.
Yes, but he has lots of free time as he is retired.
Yes,
so.
Yes. When I visit my parents, I bring a bag of laundry because it makes my dad happy to do it. But I will tell you, I wet my bed until I was pretty old. And because of that, when I was about the age of 8 or 9, my parents just started having me do my own laundry. And so I...
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, so
I
did my own laundry from that kind of age on. They were big into self-sufficiency. So yes.
Oh, well, next time I go visit your parents, I'll make sure that I bring a hefty bag of laundry myself too. And be like, hi, Barbara. Hi, Joe. Here you go.
My dad would be thrilled.
You're welcome.
So Elle and Noah sneak around, sneaking out of Noah's room via his window, which has her landing on a trampoline and flying into the pool.
When she's trying to sneak out that one time, and I'm like, I'll allow it.
Somehow her phone magically lands on the table next to the pool before she goes into the water, which is good. And yes. And Elle is now locking her phone so Lee can't just go through it. You know, that kind of stuff. Cue the montage of Noah and Elle spending time together and, once again, sneaking around.
Are they sneaking around, Corinne? They're not, they don't want anybody, so they're sneaky.
Yeah, so what you don't understand is that they don't want anyone to know, so they are sneaking around. Yes.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
They are hiding their behaviors of horny teenager-ness.
Oh. After some time, Lee finally notices that him and his bestie haven't been spending time together and confronts Elle. You've been acting weird lately. Is there anything going on? She assures him, everything's good. Good. Good.
I'm like, that's the time when you say something. That is the time when you say something.
No, Corinne, because then it would just like end here and everything would be happily ever after. And there wouldn't be a big altercation and a big scene and a big leaving in a huff.
In a huff.
Yeah. Yep. However, it's not long from that moment that we get the full-on curse your son but inevitable betrayal moment. Elle was hanging out in the garage with Noah while he worked on his bike, and she ended up falling while trying to reach a wrench for him, thus scraping her face. He brings her up to his room where he has his own little personal first aid kit to take care of all of his scrapes that he gets into when Lee walks in on them and accuses, kind of rightfully, Noah of hitting Elle, which Noah and Elle deny, but Lee has a hard time believing. Elle walks Lee outside and he asks her, is there something going on between you two? And she swears, no, there's not. They're on their way somewhere, so she tells him to get in the car and she'll go inside and grab her stuff. When she goes back upstairs to Noah and lets him know that she's telling Lee tonight, he smiles softly at her and says, good, because then I could take you to prom.
Aww.
Which causes them to kiss, which would normally be fine. But Lee, in fact, didn't start his car. No, he went back up to Noah's room and sees the kiss. He sees them kissing and he shakes his fist in the sky, yelling again. Hold on. Me. Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. Tears stream down his face as he dashes out of the house. Elle tells Noah to stay inside as she dashes after him, asking him, Lee, wait, Lee. He finally stops, turns around and says, so this is what you've been keeping from me? Elle pleads, I swear I didn't want you to find out like this. And he angrily retorts, I don't think I was ever supposed to find out. Elle is about to respond when Noah, who absolutely did not stay upstairs so that Elle can have a private convo with her bestie, says, hey, this isn't all Elle's fault. This inflames his little brother. Seriously? You dick around with so many girls, and here you are treating Elle just like a slut you picked up at the club.
Ooh.
Noah tries reasoning with him, but Lee is beyond reason. You're trying to tell me you haven't slept together? Because as Elle and Noah look down, nothing to see here.
Mm-hmm.
Lee knows. They did the horizontal mambo and bitterly explains, Elle has no idea what she's gotten herself into with you. Noah retorts, you're acting like a hurt little bitch.
Oh.
And that's when Lee punches Noah straight in the face. Doesn't really faze him, though. His big brother pins him down to prevent further attacks while Elle yells at Noah, "Get off of him!" repeatedly. As Noah yells, "Chill! You must chill! Chill!" to Lee. Lee eventually stops struggling, and Noah releases him. Lee heads to his car with Elle close behind, pleading, but he gets in and slams the door, saying, "So much for rule number 9. You know, my whole life, Noah was better at everything and had everything. The one thing that I had that he didn't was you, and now he has that too. You two deserve each other." He throws his car into drive and speeds off. Elle stands watching his car drive away when Noah approaches her from behind and gently lays a hand on her arm. It's over. He'll get over it. But Elle is in full-on, "Curse your sudden butter." Hers is a little bit lower, so I'm going to bring it down a notch. "Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal" mode as well. And she accuses, "Why did you come downstairs? I told you to stay up there so I could talk to him. You made things so much worse." Mm-hmm. Noah says, "Hey, you can't pin all of this on me." And Elle responds with gritted teeth, "Just leave me alone." Noah bitterly replies, "No problem." Gets on his motorcycle and drives off. And while she has feelings for Noah, her heart is really breaking over Lee and their lifelong friendship that has definitely derailed and may never get back on track.
Aww. And now Elle has a conversation with Lee's mom, Molly. So what's a girl to do but spend quality time moping in bed? Her quality mope is interrupted by her dad letting her know that someone wants to see her. She hopefully pops up into sitting position. "Lee?" But it isn't Lee. It's Lee's mom. She asks if they can talk, and Elle agrees.
Did we mention it was Molly Ringwald? If this was in a movie that we covered a few months ago called Pretty in Pink, she might be there to help Elle make a dress for the prom.
And we wouldn't want her to help her make the dress for the prom, because dress that she made from the prom was horrible. It was horrible.
It was hobobo. She would take her traffic cone bikini and turn it into something monstrous.
Elle is beside herself as Lee's mom, Molly, sits on the bed next to her. Elle apologizes, her voice teary. "There's not really anything to talk about. I'm just sorry that I lied and messed everything up with Lee." Molly compassionately responds, "You know, your mom and I were best friends for over 20 years, but sometimes we fought. And it wasn't pretty, and it wasn't always easy to reconcile. But ultimately, we always forgave each other." Elle's eyes well up with tears. "I don't know if Lee will ever be able to forgive me." Molly encourages her. "Don't give up on him. You're lucky if you can even get one really good best friend in your life. You just have to figure out how to make it right." "And Tamara is my one really good best friend in my life. And we have gotten into some arguments. And I will say that our friendship has gotten stronger by us figuring out how to communicate with each other and make things right."
Very, very true statement. I was really worried when we started this podcast because I'm like, oh, we are so fucking different. This is not going to be good. We're going to be arguing. I hope we can survive this. And it actually has been beneficial because having to work together and the intricacies of all the creative stuff that goes on with this, like, has, I think, really helped us see a different side of each other that we probably wouldn't have seen before because we weren't working so closely together.
Yeah. We definitely have been more in contact with each other than we ever have in our entire lives.
Yes. But it's been nice.
Yeah.
Like, especially during the pandemic and when your sister passed away and I broke up with my long-term ex-boyfriend, like, it was actually nice kind of having that conversation because it wouldn't just be podcast related. We'd also check in with each other and see how we were doing. And we started doing it on the regular and it was nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
But this isn't about us, Corinne. It's about,
what are you,
it's about Elle.
Friendjuary is all about us.
And we're just going to bypass the end of this movie and talk more about our lovely relationship and how it's grown over the years, thanks to ODK. Nobody wants that. Okay. This section is called Making Up is Hard to Do. The next couple of weeks are rough for Elle. Noah doesn't show up for school and is in danger of not graduating, and Lee is completely ignoring her. On the plus side, she finally decided to get her license so she could be a little more independent. And one day while practicing driving, it suddenly hits her. Rule number 7, which is, no matter how mad you are at your best friend, you have to forgive them if they give you ice cream.
Or hot dogs.
With Twizzlers, you have to have the full combo.
Yes.
So the next day at school, she appears at Lee's locker, hand extending towards him with the olive branch of a cone of chocolate ice cream, and apologizes. Lee looks like he's gonna accept the apology as he stands there and looks at the cone, but then silently and disdainfully walks over to the trash can, takes the ice cream, and dumps it into the receptacle.
Boo!
Yeah, he doesn't forgive her. However, the day after school, Elle is forlornly hanging out at the arcade. When Lee shows up, he walks over to the DDR machine, their machine, and puts in 4 quarters for one player. He glances over at Elle, who's looking at him hopefully, pauses a moment, and then clink, 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 clink. The sound of hope rings out as Lee adds 4 more quarters for a second player and gestures for her to come over. Yay! With a nod of his head. At first, there isn't really any dancing going on, just 2 people standing awkwardly and unhappily next to each other. Then Lee initiates with a couple of steps, and before the both of them know it, it's like old times. They're dancing and spinning and dipping on Dance Dance Revolution together.
Aww.
While this is happening, Noah finally makes an appearance. He goes over to Elle's house to speak with her dad. El Daddio is worried about Lee, as apparently he's not just been gone from school for the past couple of weeks. He's been gone from home, too. Noah assures him that he just needed some time to think and that he'll be heading home after his conversation with him. Noah apologizes, saying that he should have handled things differently, and he's sorry for that, but he's not sorry for falling for Elle. Daddio responds that he doesn't support their relationship, but that it's Elle's choice and she has to do what's right for her. Wow. Wow.
That's my favorite part of this movie, because there's so many times where there's like men policing relationships, fathers policing their daughters, you know?
Noah policing his little brother's best friend.
Yeah, exactly. And he's basically like, I raised my daughter. I gave her the tools and skills. And as much as I might think that this is not a great idea, that is her decision to make. And I'm like, you go.
I had to pause it and be like, what the fuck just happened? Did he really just say that? Yes, yes, he did. It was just surprising because you don't ever hear that. Like, it's my daughter and I don't like you, but if she does, I have no say.
Yeah. That was kind of my parents' philosophy. They're just like, we'll stay out of your relationship. And I think that having more conversation about like what a relationship, what a healthy relationship is, whatever, would have behooved me. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I also understand why they weren't interested in trying to blow up my relationships, because that can often drive people closer together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your parents pushed you into independence real, real early.
Yeah.
Go ahead and date. Do your own laundry. Here's the car keys. Just have it back before 9. I'm 11, Dad.
Look, when you're 11, it's time to test the wheels out and just take everything for a ride, you know?
Right. Yeah. You can babysit. Why the fuck not? Like, go out
exactly.
and make a living.
It's prom, and Elle is third wheeling it with Lee and his girlfriend, Rachel. We finally find out her name. It took a while, but now we're there. Elle looks like a princess in a strapless, peach-colored, floor-length dress with her hair in some sort of a bun-updo. Tamara, care to describe?
It's not great, Corinne. It's kind of a, almost has a 50s vibe, bouffant.
Uh-huh.
And it almost reminds me of a pop socket that you would see on your phone, but rounded on top of her head.
Yeah. Nice, nice. Their prom is in a swank hotel, and giant photos that the yearbook guy took throughout the year surround them on the walls of the room. Everyone dances for a while until the student body prez gives a speech about how this is the best year ever, yada, yada, yada. And then she opens up a space behind her and everyone filters in. It's like a giant photographic exhibit of their year. And the pièce de résistance is they rebuilt the kissing booth.
Ooh, that wasn't a small feat. That was a big-ass kissing booth,
too. Wet kisses for everyone.
No, thank you.
Lee and Elle happily stand in front of the kissing booth as their classmates cheer, and Lee dashes onto the stage, puts on a blindfold, and points to Rachel, who runs up on stage with him, and they kiss, much to the delight of their class. Elle watches the scene and is just happy. For a moment, she doesn't think about Lee or Noah or anything like that. She's just thinking about how something she helped create, the kissing booth, caused such joy and such a moment. And then she has a giant record scratch moment.
Sure.
When Noah walks onto the stage and Elle, who previously was feeling pretty good, is now full of some very conflicting feelings. Noah says, "Elle, I think you're up next." And Lee looks at the situation with sad eyes. Elle shakes her head and starts walking away. When Noah asks her to stop, she turns around and earnestly says, "Why? Why should I?" He looks deeply into her eyes. "Because I love you," everyone watches wordlessly, and he whispers, "Standing here in front of everyone, I'm telling you, I love you." Elle's eyes fill with tears. "I'm sorry, but I can't keep hurting people I care about because of you. Nobody wants us to be together." Noah is unfazed and asks, "But what do you want, Elle?" Elle responds, "I want," and trails off. By this point, all her classmates have their pocket popcorn out, except for Lee, who looks too upset to eat pocket popcorn. Elle continues, "I want to go." And she turns around and runs off like Cinderella when the clock starts striking 12. Rachel, Lee's girlfriend, runs after her after giving Lee a look like, "Seriously? You have a girlfriend. Let her be happy." But even though Rachel calls after Elle, Elle's determined to make that jog home on her own. Thank you very much.
You have a point there, Rachel. We have a very big point there. Lee, you have a girlfriend now. Why does it...
Who is super smoking hot, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I would be a little bit worried if I was Rachel going, "So you don't want her to date because, well, oh, just not your brother. Okay, but why?"
Uh-huh. Yeah.
"Because I used to have her all to myself before, and now I have to share." That doesn't sound right, Lee. That does not sound right. Say that slowly and really listen to yourself. That night, when Lee is home, Noah approaches him and apologizes for keeping secrets. But Noah wants to be clear to Lee that he meant what he said at the dance. He loves Elle, and she's not just some kind of passing fancy. He also lets his little brother know that tomorrow he's heading to Harvard to get ready for the fall, even though they haven't quite gotten to summer yet. He's just going to go spend a couple of months in a dorm room by himself.
Mm-hmm.
Noah got accepted to an Ivy League college, and since Elle has turned him down, he's not sticking around for fun in the summertime. He doesn't talk the entire time. He just looks like a sulky Anakin Skywalker.
Womp, 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 womp.
Do, 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 do.
Villain origin story.
Do, 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 do.
The next evening, it's Ellen Lee's birthday. They have decided to have a costume party, and Lee is dressed as Batman. And Elle looks like she's dressed as Diana Rigg, who plays Emma Peel in the 1960s BBC TV series The Avengers. While Lee and Elle put the finishing touches on their looks, Lee tells Elle that she made the right decision around Noah. Asshole. And that Noah had already left for college. Elle digests the information and tries to push it aside, as it seems that everyone is invited to their birthday, and the Flynn household is buzzing. The family and assorted friends gather around as Lee and Elle blow out their candles on their respective Dance Dance Revolution platform-styled cakes. And we find out rule number one. Why is this rule number one? I'm not exactly clear. Tam, if we had a rule number one of friendship, what do you think it should be?
I would revert to rule number nine about family members being off limits, because I remember that one time you were trying to push me and your dad really together hard, and I was very uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, I'm not interested in dating your sister either, so there you go.
I have cousins.
I guarantee you that if we had a rule number one of friendship, it is not what their rule number one of friendship is. Where do I say what rule number one is? Oh, I know what it is. Okay. Anyhow, Lee whispers his wish into Elle's ear, and when Lee asks what hers is, Elle tells him, "I don't have a wish this year," which is when Lee knows that her wish is to be boning Noah right now, but he doesn't say it.
Because their rule number one is that friendships, their besties have to tell each other their birthday wish and nobody else.
Exactly what yeah.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah, no, that would definitely not be our rule number one.
No.
It'd be like, rule number one, we have to tell each other our birthday wishes every year. No.
Mm-mm, no.
Not going to do that. We are better than that, Corinne. We're much better than that. We can figure something out that should be worthy of the number one slot.
Yeah, maybe that'd be like rule number 12 or something like that. But rule number one would be,
right,
you know, something more meaningful than that. Yeah. The party carries on, and while Rachel and Lee dance next to her outside in the backyard, Elle looks around at everyone else coupled up, dark bedroom window. She thinks about their magical first kiss and starts to walk off, upset. Lee quickly pulls away from Rachel. "Elle, wait, where are you going?" Elle turns towards Lee. She's visibly upset and says, "I can't do this anymore." And she runs into the house to a quiet/more private space. Lee follows her and asks, "What's wrong?" Elle confesses, "I love you and I always, always will want to be close to you. But being my best friend doesn't give you the right to tell me who I can love." Lee shakes his head. "This isn't just anyone, though. It's Noah." And Elle counters, "We made up our rules when we were 6. I love Noah and I want him. And I'm sorry that I lied to you before. I was wrong. But I'd be lying to you again if I didn't tell you that I love him with every bit of my heart. And if you can't accept that, then maybe you can't be a part of my life." Lee responds softly, his eyes teary. "I think you're making a big mistake." And Elle replies, "Then that's my decision to make." Lee affirms, "You're right. I love you, and I just want you to be happy." And for the first time during her birthday party, she seems genuinely happy. They happily and tearily hug each other, and Elle announces, "Okay, I need to find Noah. I'm going to let my dad know where I'm going." And Lee encourages her, "Let me help you. Meet me out front. You can drive the Sting, Lee's precious car."
So Lee, in full Batman drag, ditches his girlfriend at the party and hops into the passenger side of his Sting. Elle excitedly exclaims as she pulls out of the driveway and onto the street, "Thank you for doing this. I think the hardest part of all of this was seeing Noah's face at prom. I wish I just told him. Regardless, no matter how he feels now, I'm going to tell him exactly how I feel. I just have to find him first." Batman Lee looks over at her and says, "You just did," and breaks out into a giant smile as, what? Noah pulls off the Batman mask. What?
Oh my God.
Elle freaks out with the best kind of excitement and almost gets in the car accident, exclaims, "Whoa, pull over. You're trying to get us killed." Elle pulls over finally in front of a park, her face filled with delight. "Oh my gosh, I was not expecting that. I thought you were going to Harvard." Noah says, "I was going, but decided I needed to see you one last time before leaving. But you left the party before I had a chance. Lee came upstairs, told me, and set up the switcheroo. Said something about Rule 18, Elle narrates. Rule 18, always be happy for your bestie's successes. Definitely a good rule to live by, and way better at the number one spot if you ask me.
Yes, that would be a good number one spot. You're totally right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Almost as good as telling a birthday wish to your bestie.
Elle asks Noah about Harvard, but he pushes aside her question. "What I really want to know is what you wanted to tell me," he asks with a mischievous smile. Elle sighs, "I'm saying I love you." And he looks at her softly. "I'm saying I love you too." And then they make out, as well they should. The rest of the summer, they spent every day together until he left for college. Elle saw Noah off at the airport, where they gave each other their final kiss of the season goodbye. And Elle internally mused, "I didn't know if what was between Noah and I was going to work, but whatever happened, I knew there would always be a little piece of my heart that would always be Noah's." And for the first time, everything suddenly seemed possible. She gets onto Noah's motorcycle. What? He just left that with her? Kickstarts it and drives away from the airport towards the Pacific Highway that runs along the ocean. She finishes her musing with, "And all of this happened because of a kissing booth." The end.
Aww.
Mwah, 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 mwah. Corinne, let me remind you and our gentle listeners of the dry kiss ratings that we have to choose from, which are 1 kiss, do not watch, 2 kisses. If you only had 3 channels, you might watch it for a while before changing to an infomercial and then inadvertently buying yourself knives and then feel guilty, particularly when they don't cut a can as advertised. 3 kisses. Yay! Would watch this movie again. 4 kisses, the date night you've been waiting for, or 5 kisses. If this movie were life, you'd have gotten dressed by cute cartoon animals, some squirrels immaculately washed your dishes, and you rode to work on a unicorn. Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give the kissing booth?
I give this 4 dry kisses.
What? Oh. Sure.
I don't know why, but I get so wrapped up in the Noah L. passions and love story. It's an emotional decision for this very white, non-diverse movie.
Because he's a bad boy and you like a bad boy.
I, you know what? That's probably it. I do like a bad boy, sadly. If a gentleman walks down the street and he's got like bad decision dinosaur written all over him, I'll be like, ooh, that one. Hello. Ugh. So, yeah, this movie, I don't know what like when I watched it, I was in a fugue state. I couldn't even. I was like, what? So I overlooked a lot of things in my rating of it. And
you sure did.
Yeah.
You sure did.
And Tamara's going to point out all the things that I overlooked in her juicy review. How many dry kisses do you give this, Tam?
Oh. I would give it 2 dry kisses, but I really love Joey King. I loved her since we saw her in Wish I Was Here when she played a little girl shopping for her first wig.
I'm assuming that movie has something to do with cancer.
No, she's Jewish.
Oh,
and
that okay.
was for her faith.
Oh, okay. I have not seen that movie, obviously.
I thought we saw it together for some reason. I'm sure you've seen it. Probably didn't leave an impression because it wasn't a really good movie, but Joey King was phenomenal in it.
I don't think I've seen it at all.
I thought we saw it together. Maybe that was just a movie I watched and I was like, oh, this is something I'd normally watch with Corinne. She's not here, but I'm going to pretend like she is.
I liked her in Ramona.
Oh, I didn't see Ramona.
Yeah.
So I would give it 2 kisses. I'm giving it 2.5 because I love Joey King. And this movie to me was just super disjointed because in the very beginning, we didn't go over the montage of her and Lee in their earlier years where she was just a feisty girl that did not have any qualms about hanging with the guys and telling them what for. She did not like being told what to do, much like you, Corinne, which is when you said that I was like, oh yeah, I could totally see you doing this, but not running away and being like, I just need to leave. You'd be like, okay, first of all, we need to talk about this. Second of all, do we need to make a fucking scene here? Because the L I thought she was at the beginning of the movie isn't the L I thought she was in the middle of the movie, because she plays more like a damsel in distress when it comes to these 2 guys in her life. And I don't think she would have done that. And then the movie is sandwiched at the end with her being like, yeah, me and Noah fucked. We spent the whole summer together. But you know what? If he's gone, it is what it is. Like, I'm not crying over it. And I'm like, see, that's the L again. Like, that's the same one that was just like, yeah, there's possibilities out there and I don't know what's going to happen. But she does not seem at all like troubled about the fact that they might have just spent their last day together. She just kind of shrugs and goes, oh, well. So those 2 people and the person that was in the middle of the movie did not compute with me, and so it kind of took me out of it. And then like some of the situations when she went to prom with Lee and they didn't have any sort of conversation about Noah, I also didn't buy that. Like, he forgave her in the Dance Revolution arcade scene, and I think immediately after that he'd be like, okay, let's talk about this shit with you and my brother. And they would have hashed it out there because that's what their friendship read like to me. But apparently none a word was spoken about it until they go to the prom, God knows how long later. And then it all comes out and then folds into that messy ass scene. So then there's the diversity, all of the 3 Musketeers, which I'll let Corinne get into. Nobody was at the party. None of the Musketeers were here.
I read a lot of her responses differently than you do. And so I have like completely different takes on like why she was leaving and all of that. And I also think that sometimes when you have a big conflict with someone and you make up, there's a tendency to not talk things out because you just want there to be peace and not to mess with things. So like, I understand, for me, why the different beats happened the way they did. And I didn't think that she was like, yeah, whatevs about him leaving. I just think that she was in a good place with, you know, with things between them.
Yeah. I just think like it's almost like I wanted her to be this version of herself that she was when there was no relationship involved. And then I kind of hated how she responded. And that was, again, just the way I read it, because we probably watched two different movies and I always do watch two different movies because of our perspectives. But yeah, the reason why I would give it a half a star instead of the two and the two a half star, one reason is because I love Joey King. And the second reason is I fully anticipate watching Kissing Booth 2 and Kissing Booth 3, because I think they left that little dangle weirdness at the end to push forward the storyline that's going to be the Kissing Booth 2. So that also is like, don't make it super obvious. Like, you obviously left that open-ended so there could be a Kissing Booth 2, but you did it in a sloppy bad way, and I don't like it.
So, Tamara gives a juicy 2.5 dry kisses, and I give
a juicy. I wouldn't say juicy. I would not call it juicy. Don't try to beef it up with descriptions.
So Tamara gives a parched 2.5 dry kisses.
Thank you.
And I give it a juicy 4.
There you go.
And now we can move on to the 4 Musketeers of Diversity, because we left off one of our Musketeers.
Oh, yes.
Yes, the first time. And so we've got body diversity, sexual diversity, Rachel diversity.
There was no Rachels in the making of this movie. No Rachels were harmed.
Racial diversity and disability representation. Tamara, how many Musketeers are showing up to that table?
There was a teeny tiny moment at the very end where two male classmates kind of make eyes at each other in a very small scene throughout the movie. And then at the end, they wind up dancing together at the prom and are just absolutely thrilled that they finally like got together. Yeah. But that was about it on all fronts.
Yes. Beginning, middle, end, done.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the foot of sexual diversity showing up, of the
baby, the little pinky toe of foot.
And then no body diversity, no real racial diversity, no disability representation. So yay.
And then lastly, we're going to dip into our grab bag of ratings to see what two categories we're going to be judging the movie on. And the first one is, Corinne, who in this movie, what person needs therapy stat?
Ooh, I'm actually going to go with Lee. Lee needs therapy stat.
Oh, over his brother.
You know, Lee is, he's a big baby man. He's like... He has this hottie patati girlfriend now, and he wants everything to stay the same with his bestie, and he has inferiority issues around his older brother, which many of us younger siblings do have inferiority issues around our older siblings.
Thankfully, I'm not one of them.
Okay, yes, Tamara's fully evolved. I, on the other hand, struggled with that for quite a while. And
I'm full of shit. I struggled with that too, and you know I did.
I was just letting you have your moment of evolved glory. And he fully Anakin Skywalker's like the whole thing. And so I understand him feeling the curse your son but inevitable betrayal feelings and all of that. However, I feel like he should have come around differently and he should have talked about things differently for the length of friendship that they had and with in regards to what was going on.
I agree with that. I'm going to say that the person in this movie that I think needs the most therapy is probably Warren, the guy who attempted to pull Elle away from the party finish skinny dipping.
Oh, you mean Rapey McRaperson? Yes.
Yes. The homie was knocking on the sexual predator door and might be a little deranged because he said they need to find a hot tub and they're at the beach. What the fuck?
I know.
First of all, non-consensually trying to drag somebody away, like as they're actively fighting against you and then looking for a hot tub where? The man was all over the place.
Yeah.
He was a borderline serial killer. Thank God Noah showed up. And then the second category we're pulling out of our bag is... Corinne, who would you tell in this movie? Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal!
You get to go first since I went first on the last one.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. Elle, I'm going to put you up in here because your character kept flip-flopping for me. And... I wanted you to be the strong, independent woman who has agency and a sexual appetite, but can you turn into a wilting flower when Noah gets in a fight? And then just completely do a freaking reverse and have that really crappy ending that is just there to leave the door open for a sequel. And I wanted you to be better. Corinne?
I choose Noah for this. Because when the going gets tough, the tough gets going. He just disappears. Like, things fuck up between him and Elle and him and his brother. And then it's like he's in Nowheresville. And I don't mind him giving space to Elle. I think that was appropriate. But
there's a difference between space and ghosting.
Yes. Yeah. And he just completely vanished. And so... Mm. Yeah. I'm hoping that he was doing some intensive therapy, speaking of therapy, during that period of time.
Yes. We'll pretend that that's where he was.
Yes. Yeah.
And so funny that you put two of the brothers in your grab bag ratings because Corinne loves a bad boy and hates a baby man.
True. But I will say that if I were in high school, I would date Lee in a hot second.
Oh, yeah. I could see that. You'd be either which one's going to be. I'm going to close my eyes and point and whoever my finger's pointing at. We're getting it on.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, Miss Tamara, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week we're doing The Sweetest Thing.
Ooh.
And that movie has Cameron Diaz and Christina Applegate. Very good friend vibes. Super perfect movie for friendsuary. And it takes place in San Francisco, which is kind of near Corinne's neck of the woods because we've been in LA for the last two movies. So it'll be nice to head up north for one of our flicks.
What? Okay. This is incredible. We're going to do two movies that were LA. And then our next two movies are San Francisco.
Shut up. Unplanned. Oh, my God. Wow. Unintentional themes. Unintentional themes. And it's fitting because we're both friends living in NorCal and SoCal.
And
we totally didn't plan this.
West Coast. Ah. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
I did not know Sister Act was in San Francisco.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I know. Well, it came out in 1992, so it's probably been a while since you've seen it. But we're talking about The Sweetest Thing.
That was an aside.
So I can't wait to dig into The Sweetest Thing. I would also like to apologize to Miss Tamara because previously she was talking about the movie that I had absolutely no recollection of, Wish I Was Here. And after silently watching a preview of it, I remember I took her to another dying dad movie. Yes. So, because I have a knack for doing that.
Seems like you're good after my dad passed away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, it's uncanny how many movies we watched about dead dads.
Yeah.
Days after my dad actually passed away, Corinne. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, the things, nobody says anything about it in the write ups. It's not like, oh,
the trailers aren't like a dying dad on his deathbed.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, happy family stuff. And oh, look, this is happening. Did we mention there's a dead dad somewhere in there? No, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it.
It's like the website, Does the Dog Die? It should be like, is the dad dying?
Yes. Yes.
So yeah, totally did see that with you. Remember moments from it now. And also, if you have anything you'd like to say to us about The Kissing Booth, Wish I Was Here, your thoughts on Joey King's role in this movie. Was she a wilting flower halfway through? Or was she like a self-empowered badass or somewhere in between? And also, The Sweetest Thing, which is coming up next week. You can email us at onedrykiss@gmail.com, or you can reach out to us on the social medias via Instagram, Twitter X, or Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate or review this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we really appreciate you stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time.
Corinne is totally capable of profound. You've heard it here first.